Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Oh, well, here we go. We're on the show. It's the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati with you. Todd Lebo is joining us in studio as well for the rest of the show, but he's mad at me because I didn't make coffee before the show. Yesterday, Todd Lebo made coffee, and that was very good for me because we have one of those fancy coffee makers at home with a timer on it, so that I can set it the night before, and when I wake up, I've got a hot pot of coffee ready to go at home. And yesterday, I made some sort of operator error in which the timer I didn't set properly. So when I woke up, there was no coffee at home. And I walked in, and Todd said, "Don't worry, there's a fresh pot of coffee here in the studio or in the break room." And I had my coffee. And now, today, I had my own coffee from home because my timer worked properly, so I didn't make any coffee.
Didn't care about me, did you?
Man, I feel selfish.
Yeah, it's fine.
I feel
we're a real team around here.
Well, man, I let you down.
It's okay. I came in here and made the coffee.
My bad. You know, let's move on to the next play.
Let's move on.
All right, let's talk with Mike DeCourcy. You want to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see, by the way, who Missouri played in college basketball
yesterday? I heard and saw, yes.
Oh, boy. Paul Quinn College. It really exists.
It's real.
It's a real place. We're joined now by Mike DeCourcy. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hey, doesn't everybody need to have a college? Paul needs to have one too, right?
Paul Absolutely. Quinn needs a college. And Drake, I'm going to make you cue it up once again because, Mike, one of our favorite things to play on this show was, I don't know where Steven finds this stuff sometimes, but Barry White once recorded a commercial for some sort of weekend gathering at Paul Quinn College, and the outtakes are some of our favorite things to play. So here's Barry White explaining to you about Paul Quinn College.
Hi, this is Barry White, and Paul Quinn College, of course, cordially invites your ass to come on down.
So there you go.
That is great stuff.
You didn't know you were going to get some Barry White.
He had a hard time getting through that script.
Yeah. His buddy Tony kept messing up the spot. All right, let's get into it, Mike. First off, over the weekend, Kansas plays down in Orlando, and they lose to Dayton. And this is not the same Dayton team with Obi Toppin and ranked in the top 25 or anything. They'd come off, I think they were 2-3, coming off a loss to Austin Peay right before that. Dickie V was screaming, calling it the biggest upset of the college basketball season so far. What did you make of the Jayhawks falling to Dayton down in Orlando?
I did not think that was even remotely possible, to be honest with you. That Dayton team had been struggling to a remarkable degree. I mean, that wasn't the only stunning. I mean, it's not like they went out and they played five tough games and lost three of them. I mean, they lost to Lipscomb, they lost to Austin Peay, and they lost to UMass Lowell. That's what their losses were coming into this game. Now they did go out in the first round of the nameless tournament, and they beat Miami. Now Miami's not very good, but at least it showed that they were starting to play some basketball after losing those three consecutive games. But it's not a game Kansas should be losing. And it does show that they have a lot of players at Kansas. They have, like, you got 10 guys there, maybe 9, that could play for most teams, that could find a spot in the rotation for just about everybody. But do they mix well together? Do they have the point guard play they need to be elite? And believe me, the Kansas fans are expecting elite because the polls ranked them high. And when I ranked them 6th in my own top 25, I got reamed by Kansas fans for underrating them. I'm like, do you realize you're 6th? Oh, that wasn't good enough. So I know that there's a large segment of fans that are expecting better. So Bill's as good as there is, and if there's a way around what they lack, he will find it. But it's probably going to take a little time and might take a few L's along the way.
That's one of the things, Mike, that I would tell Kansas fans. You know, there was so much hype coming into the year because they had all these new faces that are great players, and they had some, you know, the guys came back who they needed to come back. And I'm just like, it doesn't happen that easy. Every year, through every one of the 14 in a row that they won and getting back into it after that, at this time of year, Bill will be at a post game or something saying, we're never going to defend. We can't run our stuff. You know, I mean, all the time. And you think, all the Kansas haters will be, this is the year that Kansas falls apart. And you look up, it's, you know, February 15th, and they're unbelievable. And he'll make this team better. I guess the question is, a loss like that probably can be a really good teaching moment for him because it's this isn't college football. It's no big deal. You lose a game down in Orlando in this weird little gym, it's fine. It's no big deal. You can coach from it and really get some attention from the guys. And I think Bill Self's probably one of the best at that, right? Finding a way to motivate the guys, and it helps a little bit more if you've made some sort of a loss like that.
Well, I don't want to say it's no big deal. Losses in basketball matter. They just aren't fatal. And that's why one of my absolute pet peeves in college basketball, especially comes up this time of year, is anytime you get two good teams on a floor, whether it's home, road, neutral, whatever, it feels like March, doesn't it? Oh, my gosh, it's a March atmosphere. No, it's not. It's not even close because this is an important game and it's going to matter and you want to win and all that. But in March, if you lose that important game, you have no more games. There is no March atmosphere. And the reality is that a lot of March atmospheres aren't great. I mean, but the game is unbelievable because the players, you know, turn it into what it is, which is there is no tomorrow. So Kansas's loss to Dayton will matter in March in terms of, you know, it might knock them down a seed line or something. It's going to matter, but it also isn't fatal. It's not the end. It's okay. What are we not doing that we can do? Or what do we have to do to cover for what we can't do? And I think it begins for this team with playmaking. They don't have an idea. I mean, look at what the run they went through. Frank Mason and so many great players at that position. And right now they are not. That is not their strong position. They are not strong at the most important position on the floor. Now the advantage for them, or the saving grace or whatever, is that there are a lot of teams that aren't great at that position. Duke's not great at that position. Duke's number one in the country right now. They're not great at that position. Purdue is effective at that position, but they're not great at that position. There's no Jalen Brunson there. This is maybe a little bit of a different season in that there are a lot of teams that are expected to be good that aren't great at that spot. And Kansas is certainly one of them. And they have to figure out their way around it just like everybody else does.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the things that I thought stood out in that game, the Dayton game. I feel like Ochai Agbaji's ability to create shots and get to the basket has come a long way, but I still wouldn't put him at some elite level in that regard. And I know Right. You're talking more about the guy that's going to have the ball in his hands. And man, I saw a lot of hero ball from Remy Martin down the stretch in that game, and bad shots, just like bad shot selection stuff. And you could see the reaction from Bill Self on it. And I'll admit, I didn't watch Remy Martin like game in, game out, play in, play out, you know, during the time that he was at Arizona State. Is that? Oh, that's my computer. Sorry, I thought that was. I was looking over at Todd. Like, what's going on, man? Turn your computer off. That was mine. So sorry about that. So, what is that? What can Remy Martin be at this point in his career? And that, do they just have to live with he's going to do stuff like that when it comes to close games, or how much can he evolve under Bill Self?
Well, I think it's up to Bill how much, and Remy as well. But it's up to Bill how much he's willing to tolerate in that regard. But I think you could see this is who he is. That's the player that he is. Now, he assisted at five per game as a sophomore, so you'd think, okay, well, he's moving in the right direction. He's gone backward in terms of that element of his game each year. It's really hard to stay in front of him. College defenders have a very difficult time staying in front of him. But he's probably on a good team. A team with championship aspirations, which we know Kansas has. He's probably best suited to be a guard off the bench that gets 22 minutes a game, and you say, okay, we need some buckets. Go get us some. But at the end of games, unless you're trying to rally, I'm not sure that he's the right guy. Now, Bill may make a liar out of me, because he's as, like I said, he's as good as there is, and it's up to Remy to accept the coaching or not. But the ball has to move, and you can't go through a game like that against Dayton and only get 11 assists on 30 buckets, which is what they did as a team. The only one who had a significant assist number was Christian Brown. He's a wing. I mean, who's supposed to be a stationary shooting wing? And good for Christian that he's doing more than that. But he's being asked to cover for the deficiencies elsewhere. That's not really his natural role. Maybe that's what they ultimately evolve into, because that's what Duke is doing. I mean, they're not using their point guard to run their offense. They're running it through Wendell Moore, and Wendell's doing a great job, and Duke beat Gonzaga the other night, and they're number one in the country. So maybe that's what they evolve into. I don't know what the plan is or what it will be. I think it's still early to try to figure it out. But I can guarantee you that between now and January 1, that's going to be job number one at KU, is to try to figure out how do you long-term win games with the point guard play that they have.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is our guest. We're talking some college basketball. Let's talk a little bit about Kansas State. We got to see them here in Kansas City last week. They played against some really tough competition. They lost both games 72-64. That's kind of an odd one, right? I guess it can happen that way. But they got down in both games, but they continue to fight and fight and fight and do what they do, because they very rarely just fold the tents up. What do you think, where are they right now, I guess? I mean, they've got an easy game this week, but then they're going to play Wichita State on Sunday. They've got Marquette on the schedule. They're playing at Nebraska. What should Cat fans expect from what you've seen from them so far against the competition they've played?
Well, I think I think the first thing that you have to remember is that both of those teams that they played are top 10-ish. Arkansas may be a little bit more toward 15. Illinois was not at that point playing to that, but I still think Illinois is one of the 10 best teams in the country. So that's a good sign to be competitive in those games. I think the Wichita State game is a great opportunity for them. And they've got a lot of games like that before Christmas. They play Marquette, which is very good but not great. And that one they get, I believe, at home. And then they play at Nebraska as well, which, again, not a great team, but a team that's dangerous enough to challenge you. So there are real opportunity games there for K-State to show what they are, what they're capable of. And it starts in that Wichita game. Obviously, it's going to be a difficult atmosphere. I think they've done a really good, solid job to this point of building toward, sort of a successful season, a transitional. Last year was kind of the rebuild, and this year now you're starting to try to move forward. And I don't know that the horizon necessarily includes them going back to the tournament, but I think you have to make a step forward in this season. And so far they've looked like that they are going to do that.
Meanwhile, for Missouri, we mentioned they put it to Paul Quinn College last night, but that's an NAIA team. I don't think you can take much away from that. Over the weekend, they lost to Wichita State 61-55, and their high scorer ended up with 17 points. Only two players in double figures for Missouri in that game, and I just feel like, boy, that's one of the things watching Missouri under Konzo Martin is their offense has been difficult to watch from time to time. I'm just curious what you think of Missouri right now as they stand at 3-3 after that loss against Wichita State.
Yeah, I think it starts with not having the degree of talent that you need to be successful in a league that probably is the best in the country this year. I thought coming in that the Big Ten would be stronger than it has been. They bounced back last night in the first round, the first day of the ACC Big Ten Challenge with a road win at Virginia they got a road win at Virginia by Iowa.
Iowa, yeah.
And then a home win for Illinois against Notre Dame. So the Big Ten may be bouncing back a little bit, but I still think the SEC has more strength at this point. For me, it was one of the two are going to be the best league, and so far the SEC has stepped forward and say, that's us. We're gonna do it. And so to go into that league this year with this level of talent just doesn't seem to be sufficient. It's going to take a furious effort for them to win at home, and it's going to be very difficult for them to win a lot of road games with the level of ability that they have. I mean, they did not recruit elite talent out of high school, which is okay if you're building. That's all right. But they also didn't get much in the way of the transfer portal, and that's restocked a lot of teams. I mean, you look at Iowa State. You know, Iowa State has started beautifully. Their top six guys are five transfers and a freshman. That sort of shows what was out there if you were successful in the transfer market. And Mizzou did not hit that very hard, or maybe tried and didn't succeed.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest, and I think last week when we were on, you were just about to get on a Zoom that day with the Tiger Club of Kansas City. Is that correct? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, we had a very nice
How did that go? Are they okay? Because I haven't been there in a while. Because, you know, those fans, they are all like, what's the buyout for Konzo? When can they do it? They do it before May or after May? And they're kind of, they've had enough of it. And there's no reason to fire a coach today because the season has to go. But it doesn't look good for Missouri right now. I guess if we're sitting here today and it doesn't work out and they end up making a choice to part ways at the end of the year, this year or next, if it's $3 million or $6 million, whatever day they get it done, and go find someone else, will we look back and say this was a good hire or not? I mean, because there was so much excitement early because they got Michael Porter and Jontay Porter to come to school there and all that stuff, but the promise just hasn't been filled. Right now, has this been a good hire?
Well, you know, I liked Konzo a lot at Tennessee. I thought he did a tremendous job. I thought he did nice work at Cal. I was never a fan of the whole Porter deal because I don't have a problem with it ethically doing that. I just don't think that – I don't think any longer with the way the talent operation is, the talent structure is, that you can get the value out of that. That you used to be able, like if you hired back in the 70s or 80s, maybe even the 90s, if you hired the coach of a really good player and you got the player, that player might be with you for 3 or 4 years, and might lead you to a couple of conference championships or Sweet 16 or whatever. And now you get that guy for a year, and in Michael's case, he came in and you got him for what, 3 games?
Yeah.
And so I just don't believe in that any longer. I don't, like I said, ethically, as long as you don't break the rules, I don't have a problem with how you get guys. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just not, I wrote this several years ago when people were starting to do it again, and I'm like, look, it doesn't make sense. Because you're not going to have, if he's as good as you think he is, and Michael certainly is that talented, as we know, you're not going to have him very long. And if you're a team that's in a position to move forward, you don't really need to do that. And if you're a team that's just starting out, you sure as heck don't need that because you're trying to build a program, not have one season. Memphis tried the same thing with the Lawsons. Mm-hmm. Now, neither of the Lawson brothers turned out, you know, and Dietrich was the one who was the one everybody wanted. And Dietrich had a very nice career at Kansas, but it didn't help Memphis at all because Dietrich wasn't that player. He was a very, very good college basketball player, but he wasn't transformational. And when he wasn't transformational, they got mad and left. So it just doesn't. It's not a good strategy. And I really believe that Mizzou has been trying to recover from that. Really, since year one, since Michael didn't play. They've been trying to recover for that every year since. And then last year they finally had a team that was veteran, that was capable and that was able to win a lot of big games, but they faded at the end of last year. They just lost it. And in a year like last year, there are lots of excuses for losing it. I shouldn't even call them excuses. There were lots of reasons for losing your edge. I mean, it was not a normal year for anybody. So I don't blame them for that. I don't blame the team that fell apart at the end of last year, but it was the team that you'd built to for 3-4 years. And they made a tournament and only lasted one day. So I think that was a mistake that he made. And now, in a year where they probably needed to have a big year in terms of bringing in players, they brought in, a lot of guys that are long-term players, players who will help you in 3 or 4 years. But is the appetite there for the wait to get that good? I don't know that it is. I hope, I don't like to believe in hot seats or anything like that, but I'm willing to examine what's happened. And I think that's where it went not right. I won't want to say wrong, because they did have last year, and they did win 22 games. And so I don't want to say it went not right, I don't want to say it went wrong, but it went not right. And as a result, there's a lot of impatience there that I certainly understand.
We're visiting with Mike DeCourcy, and of course, then Xavier Pinson gets kind of, I don't know, runs off, leaves, whatever, and they don't have somebody that can score that way filling in. Hey, I want to go back, though, to what you mentioned, Iowa State, Mike, and this, look, the Big 12 is always better when Iowa State's good, right? It's more entertaining. It's fun to watch. They got a couple of big wins over top 25 teams already this year. They're undefeated. By the way, one of those transfers, you mentioned their roster loaded with transfers, Tristan Inaruna, who had been at Kansas, is averaging 8 points a game for Iowa State right now. And maybe if it's been off the radar for people in Kansas City a little bit, how surprised are you or impressed are you with what Iowa State has done so far this year?
Well, I'm very impressed. They did a really nice job. They handled Memphis in the championship game of that tournament. I think that was the preseason NIT that they played in, and they just wrecked Memphis. And I'll say that, having watched Memphis, if you play hard, it's not that on D. It's not that hard to wreck them. I mean, their offense is really, really a mess. But they also, they got 30 points out of Gabe Kauscher, a player that I know very well from my work at Big Ten Network. Gabe was the starting shooting guard at Minnesota for the last 2-3 years, and a very effective player who has never quite lived up to it as a shooter, and he's still not shooting the basketball that well there. But he got 30 points against a Memphis defense. One thing Memphis does do is defend really well. And to get 30 on that was an impressive performance. They have a kid named Isaiah Brockington, another player who transferred in from the Big Ten, really athletic, dynamic, powerful shooting guard who's averaging 15.5 points a game, shooting the basketball really well. I do wonder if they're quite big enough overall to be at the top of the Big Ten once Kansas puts it together. But Baylor's playing really well. Texas is still really powerful. But I think that this is a team that's said that they're not, even though it's the first year for their head coach, they're not looking at this as we're just trying to get this turned around. I think they're looking at this like, with the transfers we got in, the experience we have, we can make it. We can get to the tournament and then see how it goes. And I think it's possible for them. I mentioned not being able to compete at the very top of the league, but the middle of the league is there. I mean, you can deal with Oak State. You can deal with West Virginia right now. We mentioned what K-State is up to and TCU. You could compete to finish fourth or fifth in the league, and I think fourth or fifth in the Big 12 is likely, especially now with the wins they have on their resume, fourth or fifth in the Big 12 is likely to make it.
And I think if you went and asked 50 people on the streets in Kansas City, they couldn't tell you who their coach is. But that's how it goes. I mean, T.J. Otzelberger, he was an under-the-radar kind of hire, and he's a very good coach, and they've got it going pretty well right now. They got some big ones coming up, though. They're going to play at Iowa, and that's always a tough one for them. Mike, before we let you go, I want to ask you kind of a general question. We're not quite a full year into name, image, and likeness, and there was such a flurry right at the beginning where things were happening. What's our status report right now on how this has affected college basketball from your eyes?
Well, it seems to have depressed the salaries of head football coaches, doesn't it?
Not at all. Oh, boy.
You know, that was the funny thing, was that the concern that was expressed by some people was that if the money started to flow to the athletes, it would stop flowing to the athletic departments. And we now have like four coaches in the last week that have signed for more than $9 million a year. I mean, that. So I don't think that that's been a problem. I think the one thing that's good is that it's sort of calmed down the whole cheating allegations I've never really been comfortable with just the assumptions. Oh, they're doing it. I've never been comfortable with that. If you know, tell me. I mean, I'll write it if you know, but don't whisper in my ear, oh, you know, they're cheating, right? You know, I hate that. If they are, put it on the record. Or even, you know, give me the proof. But you don't get that. You just get sniping. So there's been a lot less of that now as a result of name, image, and likeness. There's a lot of players, a lot of athletes, men's and women's, multiple sports. We've seen volleyball players cash in. We've seen soccer players be able to make money, and we've seen quarterbacks that you would expect to be able to make money get money. So it's been great from that standpoint. It's obviously not a very well-regulated space, and, you know, I think that it would be good if it were a little bit better regulated anyway in terms of the uniformity, if it were possible. The only way you're going to get uniformity is through federal legislation, and I don't think that's a high priority for anybody. So I'm not sure that it's going to happen. So I think you're going to see this go forward like this, and maybe more conferences over time will put their own regulations in place, understanding that it's probably not coming from anywhere else. But they're going to be careful with that because they don't want to put any regulations in place that get them sued. So I think that overall it's been good for college athletics, in part because you get a lot less complaints. Now, what would be bad, and I will say this without any compunction, is the movement by some to make the athletes employees. That's a bad move for everybody. And because the athletes will end up worse. And I don't necessarily mean the two or three sports that do make money and what will happen to them, but I'm talking about across the board. If you move toward that, where do you draw the line? Who's an employee and who's not? The sport has to make money. Well, I mean, lots of businesses don't make money and still have employees. You know, they hang on for a while trying to get to make money, but they're not making money. So how are they employees? Well, okay, so you have a track team, say. Are they're employees now? Well, why have a track team then? It's just an expense you don't want to have. So I don't know that necessarily that would be a good thing for college athletics. I like what name, image, and likeness has done. I see a lot of athletes that are doing good things with the money they're making, that are doing good things with the attention that's coming to them. And, you know, I'm not opposed to a young man or woman driving their own Porsche. I mean, as long as you drive it within the speed limit, fine by me. That's great. So I think it's been a good move for college athletics generally. And hopefully it will stay at that level and not move to the whole employee-employer thing, because I do not like the future of college athletics in that environment.
Who buys a Porsche to drive the speed limit, Mike? So what's the point?
You know that if I had one, I would.
That's why I don't have one. Otherwise, I would buy one totally. Mike, hey, thank you so much for the time, man. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, guys, thank you.
All right, that is Mike DeCourcy. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.